You've tuned in to part one of a two-part podcast. The Roundtable Podcast goes to Balticon. Hello, everyone. I'm Dave Robison.
And I'm Brian Humphrey.
And you're listening to a special post-Balticon wrap-up episode of the Roundtable Podcast.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. In this particular episode, Dave gets to wax eloquent about this awesome thing that he went to while I stayed home and wrapped up another year of teaching, which is lovely. So, Dave, why don't you jump in and just talk about everything that I got to miss out on?
Oh, dude, you were so missed. First and foremost, I cannot tell you how many people walked up to me and with hope and delight in their eyes asked me, "Is Brian here? Brian here?" And I had to say, "No, it's graduation weekend," and yada yada. And they're going, "Oh man, he's got to get here next year."
Absolutely.
And God, someday you have got to make this scene, dude. First and foremost, the program, the sessions, the panels that they had were freaking amazing. And every hour they had a different session on everything. I mean, everything from indie publishing and marketing your books to building listenership for your podcast to, you know, use of good and evil in fiction. They even had a section on what was it, on, it's either Sunday or Monday, on teaching with spec fic.
Awesome.
And I thought, holy crap, Brian has totally got to be here. And it was a whole, the whole afternoon, I think, was dedicated to various workshops about incorporating spec fic into teaching whatever you're teaching, math, science, English. I know. I'll send you the names of the people involved and any other corollary information because, holy crap, that is something you could totally use.
Absolutely. Yeah, do that.
So every hour they have one of these amazing, I mean, and they were like, you know, 10 every hour, it seemed like, readings of people, you know, Merle Afferty, Nathan Lowell was reading, Paul Cooley was reading, Nobilis Reed, oh my God, the list goes on and on, Jared Axelrod, it was the hotness, Jared Blackwell, all of these people, and I'm sitting there every single hour going, there are at least three panels I want to go to. Brian, where the hell are you, man? Because we totally need to divide and conquer.
I know. I know. Well, and next year it will definitely, you know, Allie and I have been talking about that. And even if, you know, there are things that I have to like get out of in order to go, I'll get out of them. This was a very special graduation weekend for us because there were a couple students that we had for, you know, a really long time, for years, that that meant a lot to us, that we had to be there for their graduation or we would never be forgiven, you know.
Sure.
But yeah, no, I wanted to ask you because I look at conferences and to be totally honest, I have never been to a conference.
Oh, dude.
Or a convention. And but I, you know, when I started getting into like writers groups and stuff a couple of years ago, I was looking here in Colorado to see if there were any that were worth going to. And there's one that like every year, it's in Northern Colorado, whatever, but they charge like $350.
Whoa.
To go, you know,
But that's a writer's group, right? That's a writer's conference.
I know. But I'm, you know, just in general, it's hard for me to drop that kind of money. When I don't know what I'm getting myself into, and with this, it wouldn't have been an issue, but it's good to hear that there was just some phenomenal programming that you know, this one, I don't think was even close to 350, right?
No, God no. It was like 50
bucks.
Yeah,
like way low. Yeah, yeah. And apparently probably had a hell of a lot more really amazing stuff than well, some of these other more expensive ones.
There was, I mean, first of all, wall-to-wall authors.
Right.
Oh my God. And publishers, you know, small publishers, indie publishers, but you know, Dark Quest Books was there. Robin Sullivan from Ryden Publishing was there. And Michael Sullivan, her husband and now world renowned author, was there. Mike Cole was there from who was on our show. You know, Paul Cooley,
Ryden Publishing is who Nathan Lowell goes through now, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just you know, a bunch of neat little podcasters getting together and talking about our stuff. These were credentialed, talented, gifted publishers and authors that right. were on these panels talking about how to be awesome in your writing or in your podcasting or in your marketing or in your artwork. It was amazing.
Sounds like just a phenomenal weekend.
Well, it was. And here's an example of how awesome it was. I went to one of the editor panels just because there was a great session on how editors edit books. And I thought that would help with the podcast. I could get some inside information on how the editors do their thing and so on.
Right.
And one of the guys, Bill Fawcett, very cool guy, very knowledgeable. And I saw him in the hall afterwards walking with a lady. And I stopped him and said, Mr. Foss, I really enjoyed your panel. Would you be interested in being a guest host on the Roundtable podcast? And he said, yeah, very much. And my wife might also enjoy that too. And she said, oh, yes, that sounds wonderful. And so I'm swapping out business cards. And he hands me his. And there it is, Bill Fawcett. Very cool. She hands me hers. It's Jody Lynn Nye, the guest of honor of the con.
Oh, man.
Queen lady of awesome fiction and fantasy. And I'm going, and I kept it together. I didn't embarrass us, Bri. You know, I smiled and nodded, shook hands, and thank you, you know, appropriate gratitude without fangasming all over them.
Right.
They turn and walk down the hall, and I collapse into Terry and go, I'm hyperventilating. So moments like that were rife.
Yeah. Were rife. Well, and that's what I hear, you know, is it's like what Lee said when we had Lee on, you know, where he said that these conferences and conventions are like, the whole point is to get, just meet people.
Yes.
And see that these people are cool people, that it's not, they're not on some pedestal that you can't ever reach them, or, you know, they don't spit on you from up on high. That they're just really, really neat people that you can rub elbows with. And, yeah. and that's just so cool.
And they're actually really, really, really interested in meeting you.
Right.
You know, that's why they're there. They're not there. I mean, yeah, there's networking and there's meeting with the peers, but you don't go to a con for that. You go to a con right. to make yourself accessible to the fans. There was, I got to sit down for a nice, wonderful chat with Justin McCumber, our bastard father.
That's right.
And discovered that we have a bastard sister.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. The Lauren Harris of the Pendragon Variety podcast was also inspired by the Dead Robot Society. And so we discovered that she's our older sister.
Awesome.
Yes. So that was cool. And God, Brian Lincoln, he was there. Right. Abby Hilton was there. Everybody that's been on the podcast was there.
That's fabulous. And I'm looking, you know, I go on Facebook and I'm looking through your pictures, and they all just seem superb.
Yes.
Like just the coolest people ever.
Yeah. You know? Let me tell you, I have a treat. It'll be like you were actually there. I went around with I had my little iRig microphone and my iPad with GarageBand.
Excellent.
And I had never used this thing before. And I was going around to everybody and asking them one question. I was asking them, is talent something that you're born with, or is it something that you develop over time?
Ooh.
And I got about 13 responses, and I was thinking it would be very cool with this Balticon wrap-up episode to play those back and give you a chance, Brian, to hear some of these people, in some cases, in various states of inebriation, talking about their perspectives on talent, because to every single last one of them has an intriguing spin or perspective on it. So
awesome.
Can we do that? Are you down with that?
Yeah, I think that sounds fabulous.
Okay. This first one is Brand Gamblin, who is one of the few people that I interviewed that hasn't been on the podcast yet, but we will fix that soon. Very articulate man, writes wonderful stories. I sat in on a reading of his, and it was very, very cool. You would love it. It was a deal with the devil story with fabulous. A very intriguing twist that I've never seen done before, so very inventive. So here's his... here's his take on that question.
All right, I remember when I was like a little kid, I read that Mozart wrote his first concerto at age 5. And I pretty much figured, all right, it's over for me. I got no shot at anything now because, you know, he beat me. I'm over five and I haven't written anything. There are always going to be people who are just innately capable of doing something. There are some people who can drive a car better than anyone else. There are others who can't parallel park. There is a certain innate capability for everything that exists, but at the same time, that can't get better without exercise, and those who don't have it can exercise to get up to that level. Well, maybe not up to that level, but it's... I do believe that there is talent, but I don't believe that it's insurmountable. I didn't even start writing until I was, 35. And, you know, there are people who think I'm doing a really great job at it. They're like, oh, my God, you must have been writing your entire life. And they're like, no, I just picked it up. You know, it's just – and I don't mean to make it sound like I don't care about it. It's just something that was late, and it's something that you work at. And, you know, if you don't have that talent, you can still succeed. So that it makes it hard to – tell who has the talent then. Because, I mean, Grandma Moses didn't start painting until she was 80. So was that talent? And if it was, why didn't she figure it out earlier, you know? Or was this just, you know, she was working at it and got there?
So that was Brand Gamblin.
Okay.
So I know he didn't mean it that way, but the comment that talent is not insurmountable.
Right.
And I know that's not what he meant. I know he was saying that it's having it or not having it really ultimately isn't a factor.
Right.
But I liked his observation that, you know, Mozart at five had written his first concerto, and here I am, you know, 35, whatever, and I'm totally. Host. I'm done. I can't do anything.
And I think that's something that we all, you know, we all gauge other people and look at, you know, I remember reading Chris Moore. Have you ever read Chris Moore books?
No, I haven't.
He's got a great book out called... A Dirty Job, and it's basically the main character discovers that or finds out that he's been hired to be death, and so he has to like collect souls, and so it's a very funny book, and he's a very funny writer, but he had this thing on the back of his that said something like he was a child prodigy at the age of 30. It's one of those things that's really how we all feel is like, you know, oh, well, I should have done this 10 years ago, or I should have done this 15 years ago, or, you know, whatever. And I think that it's an interesting point what is his name? Brand that he makes when he says, you know, an 80-year-old who suddenly is an amazing painter. And if it's talent, then why didn't she discover this earlier on? And I think that one of the problems is we have a tendency to judge ourselves before we put in the effort to discover if we can really go anywhere with it.
Yes.
And so it's entirely possible that woman had dabbled in art before, had been told that she was talented, maybe was told that it's a stupid venture or it's a bad way to go. You know,
or was told she was untalented.
Right. Exactly.
You know, judged by other people as no, sorry, you'll never make it.
Yeah. Yeah, and so I think that we listen sometimes too much to people outside of ourselves, and also it's an interest thing, you know, like maybe this woman who's 80 and starts painting, maybe she never really had an interest in painting until then.
Sure.
And then discovered how good she really was or how good of an eye she really had when the interest came about, when she had time to enjoy those kinds of things. So it's an interesting
Or process. She, when she reached that age of 80... the opinions and the judgment that had been leveled on her, maybe by herself, maybe by others, had ceased to have any relevance or importance. And she finally allowed herself to say, well, what the fuck? I'll pick up a pen.
And maybe that's it.
Yeah.
Maybe the naysayers ceased to breathe.
Ooh, well spoken, sir.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the
moral of this particular interview is don't wait until you're 80 to give yourself permission to be awesome.
Right.
There say what the fuck now, you know, to invoke. Now, some of you kids may not remember Risky Business. Back in the day, that was a Tom Cruise movie.
Oh,
and the moral of the story was sometimes you just got to say what the fuck.
That's right. I thought the moral of the story was don't be a Scientologist.
Well, that's the part two. Yes, exactly.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So let me cue up another one. This here is Nobilis Reed. And some of these guys, I'll warn you right now, A, it was the first time I was using the iRig mic. The other thing is that several of these happened during I won't call it a drunken revel or a debauched orgy of creativity, but I will say there's a lot of loud people that may have been imbibing. So please forgive the audio quality. I got it as good as I could. So here's Nobilis Reed.
It depends on what you mean by talent.
Okay.
My mother and my grandmother are both artists. And if you go back through their lineage, way back in the midst of time, in the German Renaissance, there was a master sculptor by the name of Tilman Riemenschneider that I am descended from along with my mother and my grandmother. There is something about the way our brains work that we can see things in a way that perhaps other people don't see them. But the ability to take that perception and make it into reality is a skill that can be learned. So sometimes there's unique perspectives that might be inborn, but the ability to enact things is a skill that can be learned. And since everybody has their own perspective, the whole ball of talent, which is something to say and the ability to say it, everybody can learn that. But if you're trying to say something that is someone else's vision and not your own, then you can't learn that.
I love that last bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's where the gold is.
Yeah. Well, and interesting, and we'll, you know, the next couple that we're going to do actually kind of echo in different ways. I call it obliquely parallel what Nobilis is referencing here. But that last bit where it says, don't try and be somebody else. Don't right. try and do something that's not you. You will suck. Or it's maybe won't suck, but you're not giving your true voice to the task. I admire Nobilis especially because he was like at least 2.5 sheets to the wind as he was articulating that, and he was very articulate. So that was freaking awesome.
Right. So he's talking about don't take somebody else's thought and try to make it your own. And I think it's very similar to directing in theater where, you know, what a bad director will do is tell his actor what their motivation is and tell his actor, you know, you're in love, and give him all this direction and tell him how he's supposed to be acting and then show him. And then the actor tries to imitate the director. And then it's flat and it's exactly that. It's an imitation and there's no internal passion with it. And so just in directing, the best thing you can do is to get the actor to discover it on their own. You know, that's one of the things when we bring on guest writers, my first concern when we first started this was, well, I don't know if I would want to come on as a guest writer because I'd be afraid that somebody would steal my idea and go and run with it and whatever. But if they did, it would be flat because there would be no passion behind it, or they would change it enough that it doesn't matter if they take it because sure. I can still write the one that's mine.
Sure.
So I think it's a really good point that he made.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, let me cut to Brian Lincoln and his observations, which of course, Brian Lincoln, Mr. Science, he's actually got some very definitive opinions about this.
Cool.
My instinct is to say that this idea of talent doesn't exist. Meaning it's sort of this attribute people like to give, but I think that being good at something comes from working hard at it. Some people have to work harder at something than others, so maybe that's where the concept comes from, how you pick it up. I think in certain cases, some people have a very distinct advantage towards something. For example, people with a photographic memory. Like, I don't know if you've ever heard of this guy. He can get in a helicopter, fly over the city, go into a windowless room and reproduce every building exactly.
I have heard of that guy.
That guy, it's amazing to me. So clearly, you know, is that a talent? It's definitely an ability that allows him to do this. And I think a lot of artists can picture things. It's just their brain works a little differently. Mm-hmm. So there definitely is a component to skill that is based on maybe how your brain works or how you, you know, in terms of writing, you know, maybe you have an imagination that can really just imagine details easily and describe them. Like, I don't have that skill, I'll say that right now. But so my quick answer is that I think that at a certain level, some people work a little bit differently, but in most cases, you wouldn't know the difference. If people work hard at something, they get good at something. And a lot of times they're called talented when I think that they're just experienced.
I love the idea that what we might call talent is really just experience.
Yes.
So really he's kind of affirming the talent is something you acquire over time. But he's, you know, the same way that Nobilis was talking about different ways of processing information.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Brian is kind of saying the same thing, that, you know, while we may have certain assets or gifts along certain lines, it's the effort that you put into it and how you spin it and what you do with it and the experience right. that you layer that with that makes the difference.
Yeah, but I think he does a really nice job of almost scientifically delineating the whole deal.
Very much so. Very much so.
But I do feel like he's almost trying to find a more neutral euphemism for talent that it's almost like he's afraid to use the term talent, because then that's going to automatically disqualify people from being able to do something as well as other people. But I think he makes that point. And he says, you know, there are people who their brain just works a different way. And if you want to call that talent, then maybe that's what it is. And if that's what our society has determined is the definition of talent, then why not just say that that's talent?
Sure. Well, and I'm not sure who's necessarily avoiding or afraid of using the word talent. I think what he was hesitant about was ascribing some almost mystical attribute,
right,
that if someone has it, then they are somehow endowed with awesomeness and they will go on to great things. And keeping in mind that Brian does come at this from a science background,
scientific, yeah,
that makes perfect sense. And
right.
As I've said before, I completely agree with him. I think it comes down, you might have certain gifts, but your experience and how you apply it is where the mojo comes in.
Well, yeah, but just in saying you may have certain gifts, isn't that synonymous essentially with talent?
Well, it's like he's saying, you know, photographic memory. You know, that is right. something that I don't have. You don't have it. I can't draw every building in New York City after flying around in a helicopter.
Right.
But what do you do with that? You know, what do you make with that? What do you, you know, that mechanism that you have wired into yourself,
mm-hmm.
how you apply that and what you create with that has nothing to do with the mechanism itself. It's like, you know, if I give you 64 colors and I have two,
mm-hmm.
there's nothing saying you're going to make a better picture with those crayons than me.
Do you have the 64 or the two?
I have the two.
Oh, I thought
I'm handicapping myself.
Yes. Well, that's very noble of you. Yes. No, I agree with you. I get the idea. I think that if it's something where somebody is just truly gifted in music, maybe that's where the word talent comes in. Maybe talent is used to mean gifted when it is applied to something within the arts, maybe. I don't know. You know what I mean?
I do.
Like, it seems like, you know, it's easy to say, well, it's not necessarily talent if you have, you know, just a gift.
Right.
Use examples that are outside of the arts, and then we go, oh yeah, you're right. But within the arts, why not just call it talent?
Before we go any further, let me play Nathan Lowell's. because Nathan kind of ties everything up very nicely. Here's right. Nathan.
Okay.
I don't know that it's talent per se. There's been a lot of work in multiple intelligences. And I think one of the issues is the ability to integrate a knowledge domain. And some people have an ability to integrate different domains. And so somebody who's really talented as a writer might not be a very talented dancer. Somebody who is talented as an artist, a graphic artist, might have a difficult time with math, even though art, graphic arts and math are very closely related. Ironically, I think musicians and mathematicians work well together, which is an interesting observation. So I think rather than say, is there a talent gene, I think it's more accurate to say some people can integrate particular knowledge domains more fluently than others. And I think that process of integration is enhanced, fostered, lubricated by passion. And so the more you are into it, the more likely it is that you will, in fact, have the talent that puts you ahead of the rest.
Bam.
Yeah. And that goes back to something that I said at the very beginning of this, is that without passion for something, talent doesn't manifest.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, if you have no interest in music, you're not likely to be one of those people who just picks up an instrument and can play.
No matter how talented you may be at music.
Well, I don't know. I mean, how do we know that unless they do?
Exactly.
You know,
I don't think that negates the argument.
No. I agree with you. But it's one of those things, like, I've always been good at everything that I've done. I don't know that I've ever been great, because I get a passion for something. I learn a little bit of it. People say, oh, wow, look how quickly he did that. He's so talented. And then I drop it and I stop. And so I don't put in the effort to be great at anything. You know, I'm good at a lot of stuff, but
that, that's got nothing to do with your talent. That has to do with your psychology.
Well, right. Well, the stopping of things, but it does have to do with talent. If it's a matter of the passion behind it that drives it, I have kids who would be brilliant writers if they had any passion in putting energy behind it. But, you know, they look at it and they go, oh my God, you know, it's like one of my favorite sayings is, I love being a writer, I just can't stand the paperwork, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's where it is for me, at least after the ones that we've heard so far. I agree with Nathan. And I think at the very end, that's pretty close to what he says, is that, you know, you may have a natural inclination towards something, or you may have a natural ability towards something, but if you don't put passion behind it, it's never going to be nearly what it could be. And so it's possible that a lot of these people who don't seem or don't think that they are talented just aren't really passionate about the subject that they're upset about. You know,
letting the work or the opinions of others or whatever skew that passion and turn down the flame, dampen their natural inclination.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, and you know, there's always fear of success. There's desire for acceptance. There's all of these things, and all of those things have to be worked through. And sometimes it takes a lifetime,
right?
Purely because all of those things filter and diminish the passion, which, as Nathan points out, is the lubricant to integrating the knowledge domains.
Right.
You know, the vocabulary and the poetry need to be integrated into a story, and that happens through the fuel of that passion. And if you don't use that passion as your guiding light, as your laser sharp focus, then your integration of those domains and the application of your gifts is not as true.
Yeah.
So one of the shining points for me at Balticon was meeting and shaking hands with the producer and host of the Drabblecast, Norm Sherman. Oh, yeah.
Totally. I saw the picture and I was salivating.
The king of weird. And and what an amazing guy. Just, you know, very sharp, very fast, devastatingly handsome, good looks. And it's like, holy crap, I hate this guy. But you don't. You love him because he really is. He's a font of creativity. So I figured we'd take a sharp detour into the weird and get Norm's response to the question.
Talent is like boobs. You can be born with it. And at the same time, you can gain it throughout the course of your life in various different methods, primarily artificially. But I don't know. I think that not everybody likes boobs, you know, and people like different types of boobs. So I think it's just, you know, you get the debate. People are like, oh, this guy's not talented. He is talented. Everyone's got their own opinion on what talent really is. Just like everyone's got their own opinion about boobs. Yeah, some people are boob guys, some people are not. But ultimately, I don't know. I think that you could be talented at certain things. You can be born certain ways with certain talents. But that should never detract from the fact that you should work hard at what you are talented at and keep at what you are passionate about. Boobs.
That's it. That's we can end the show right there.
That's right. That's the closing
that's
argument
the
right there.
Definitive answer that we were looking for. Talent is boobs.
Talent is a lot like boobs. Yes. Yes. We're gonna put that on a t-shirt somewhere, I think.
And some of my favorite people are very talented.
Yes. And as a side note, lots of corsets at Balticon. So, you know,
ooh,
speaking of talent.
So there was a lot of talent there.
There was a lot of talent at Balticon. Yeah. Terry, don't listen.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't. I better not play this episode for Allie, or I won't be going to Balticon next year.
But there's that word again, passion.
Right.
You know, and it is so true. It's the drive, the desire, the want, the knowledge that something is out there for you, and you, nothing is going to stop you from getting it. Pretty much blows the whole argument out of the water.
Right.
So. That was just very cool, and along the very cool lines, let me drop in Paul Cooley
yes.
here real
okay.
quick.
I would hope it's something cultivated over time because I was talentless. I'm still talentless and still searching for talent. So I'm hoping that over time, by making humongous mistakes, realizing that there are mistakes, that I can then fix them in the next thing that I do. Therefore, hopefully, talent will increase with time, because the only way talent works, I think, is if you keep working at it and keep not being afraid to make mistakes, but keep working to get better at what you do. And that means self-analysis, that means taking the scope of your work, that means basically taking the time to study and get better at your craft. And I hope to I like to think that I do that, although sometimes I just say fuck it and go crazy.
That's awesome.
That is awesome. And yes. and introducing yet another key aspect to the equation, granting yourself permission to make mistakes.
Right. Right.
Yep. Yep. And
yep.
saying what the fuck sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's, again, that's part of the passion thing, you know.
Yeah.
You can be as talented as well, I don't know, as anybody, but if That was lame. Phrasing.
But that's okay. I'll leave
yeah,
it
I
in.
Didn't want to like single somebody out, because then I know somebody would go on and leave a comment and say, that person's not talented at all.
He's a talentless hack. What are you talking?
That's right. That's right. But you could be the most talented person in the world, but you know, if you don't put anything behind it, then it falls short. There's a saying that was on it's really cheesy, and Allie's gonna laugh at me when she hears that I said this. But it was on the wall in my high school theater, and it said, and I'm totally going to butcher it again, but talent without energy and you're a pauper. Talent with energy and you're a prince. Or I'm sorry, talent, no talent, but a lot of energy and you're a prince. Talent and energy and you're a king. And I always change that to, and then you're a god. But but that's kind of the idea is, yeah, you can be a prince and that's all nice and lovely and people, yeah, they cheer for you and whatever. And that's with energy and no talent.
Sure.
And so the lowest one on the scale is talent without energy. And so if you have talent and you don't put anything behind it, nobody's going to give a shit.
Right. Right.
You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And you're not doing, and you're actually not doing better than the person who doesn't have talent but puts a lot of energy behind it.
So interestingly, as this discussion goes on, it's almost not so much a matter of at least when you're starting out, when you're ramping up in your career, it's not a matter of becoming a better writer, mm-hmm. but becoming a more passionate writer.
Yeah.
Finding the things that you're passionate about and surrendering to them utterly. And letting that push you up that first steep incline of, can I do this? God, I hope I can do this. I want to do this. Yes, I can do this. Ah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and look at sports. You know, I mean, whenever you watch a sports movie, are you ever rooting for the guy that's got all the talent, or are you rooting for the guy that's like the underdog but puts his heart and soul into
sure.
it?
Sure, you know, Rocky. busting his ass, trying to make a move for. Yeah, of course. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. And I think even just in conversation, you know, if you're talking to somebody and they're not really interested in what they're talking about, then the conversation falls flat. If they have an interest in it, then it is wildly fascinating to listen to.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So there you go. And that's, I guess you're right. I think that that's the key to it, especially when you're starting out, is you have to love your subject.
Yes.
And you have to want, you have to need to share it.
Yeah.
And if you don't have that passion and that want and that need, then, you know,
find it.
Yeah, you have to
find it, or you find something that you do have passion in, because
right.
God, life without passion is,
agreed.
Yeah, I don't know how you spell that, but This has been part one of the Roundtable Podcast Goes to Balticon and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike license. Go to creativecommons.org for more information. Special thanks to Brand Gamblin, Nobilis Reed, Brian Lincoln, Nathan Lowell, Norm Sherman, and Paul Ellard Cooley for sharing their thoughts and insights, and allowing Brian and I to share it with our listeners and to wax and riff philosophical with the gold that you offered. We deeply appreciate it. Part 2 will be available soon at the Roundtable Podcast website, www.roundtablepodcast.com. Thanks for tuning in.